Welcome to the Millennial Pastor Podcast. For today's episode, I am your host, and my name is Josiah. Today is the start of season 12, and we are going to introduce our new guest host for this season. My friend Jacoby Campbell is the lead pastor of Belleroad Church of the Nazarene in Nashville, Tennessee. Did I get that part right this time?
Got it right.
He is also the author of And I Leave You With This, a book that is available, I think, everywhere books are sold. Am I correct?
Yes.
He's also
number two's coming out.
He's also, oh, number two's coming. So, hey, stay tuned. He's a part of a number of things involved in our denomination or parachurch entities like the Now Movement, young clergy representative for Southeast. You also preach all over the place, and you do so many things. Sure, you also are a father and a husband and involved in just too many things to remember. What did I miss?
I'm actually recently also an evangelist. So now it's evangelist Reverend Jacoby Campbell, Jacoby River. Anyway, they didn't have a lot of black evangelists. And so if you're a pastor, I believe you're also an evangelist. When you get ordained, they tell you to evangelize. And so I went so that other people may see that we can evangelize as well. Amen.
Oh my goodness. That's why you're flying around all the time. I was wondering if there's something more. So is that part of your evangelist duties, is going around and preaching at different spots?
Yes.
So you may remember Jacoby. He's been on our podcast at least twice. We can put the episodes linked in the description. But the first time we interviewed Jacoby, my co-host Byron and I had a fun conversation with him about what it was like to take over a church in Tennessee as a young black person who was also a millennial. Like, there was a lot to that story. And my favorite part of that story, and I always bring it up, so sorry, but I'm not really sorry because I find it hilarious, was a story about you throwing away white Jesus. And that was, well, you didn't actually do the throwing away. You brought up how maybe it was inappropriate for your daughters to be forced to kiss a photo of white Jesus. And then if I remember right, one of your board members was like, yeah, why are all of our Jesuses white? And so I guess that same day, every picture of white Jesus was thrown into the dumpster, and that was what you were known for from that point on, at least for me.
It was instantly my fault. And I found out that in your second month as lead pastor of a church, that's not the move to make.
So you're telling me you shouldn't take aim at white Jesus. But I mean, I would say whether you're black or not, because I maybe had a rendition of Jesus that people had a fence taken with because
he was hippie Jesus.
Yeah, he was too hipster, and he had like glasses, and he maybe had like a dove tattoo, and yeah, so that was very, you know, irreverent of me to take an artist's rendition of Jesus and make it into another artist's rendition of a Jesus that wasn't even historically accurate. But that's a whole other conversation we can get down the rabbit hole on shortly. Jacoby, I wanted to take time to sit and introduce this season and to hear a little bit of what to expect. I wanted to share with our listeners that this season is going to be a little different. So from kind of the production side of things, I'm not sure we're going to worry so much about coming out with an episode every week. I think we're going to try to have a couple episodes a month, but part of the reason why we don't feel we can actually produce a weekly episode is because this is a touchy subject. And it's a little difficult for some of our guests. I know you've reached out to a number of folks, and can you just tell me a little bit of what you're asking them to share and help us kind of shape what this season's going to be about?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for this opportunity, because I think what we're trying to do this season is important for the livelihood of our denomination. One thing that people do not understand, because I guess it's not a widely understood stat, a lot of the churches, I would say about out of the percentage of churches we close as a denomination, there is a high value. We're talking close to 40% of those are closed because they're generationally white churches that are now in black areas without the funds to move and without the the congregation is not willing, nor is the pastor willing, or any combination of the two is unwilling to diversify this leadership in order to survive the community shift. And so there is a small number of people that are pushing to try to I guess, get these pastors and congregations to shift their identity to be more Christ-like and be more accepting to what their community is now. And so what we're going to try to do in this particular season is bring in some of the leaders that I have personally worked with that were trying to, after having their own revelation, their own coming to Jesus moment on their own with Christ, which is a great thing, wanting to diversify so they can grow and lean in and really be a missional church, a church that the community walks into instead of the typical drive-in churches, because of course the neighborhood has shifted. And just the reaction and how they, the pushback they receive, kind of how they navigated that, and you know what was the result of that when bringing it to the church at large, just so that we can get this conversation from more than just a Black person saying this is the issue, but more or less saying, you know, there's people trying this, but there is a need for something else. And we, and maybe through this, someone can hear it and can identify that I'm also going through that particular situation. I've also tried to shift my congregation, and I also have a community, and this is something I've gone through. And maybe this will give you a healing salve of thank you for bringing this up because I need it, or maybe it'll bring to the attention of the proper DS or leader in the Nazarene church that has the, I guess, the pull and the power to bring in some cultural sensitivity training and push the narrative of how this must happen for our churches to survive.
So many things come to mind. I'm going to just say a couple tangential things. If you want to pick up one of them and run with it, feel free, but I will land on production concerns. I've tried to have some of these conversations myself. I happen to be a white man, so that comes with a different set of assumptions and biases to anyone hearing me talk about things. But it is oftentimes something that's very politically charged, right? And that creates a myriad of tension, of problems, of obstacles for some folks to just have a conversation that's not emotionally charged in that moment, which will come out probably in some of these stories, I imagine. But the second thing that I think is fascinating to consider as I imagine what this season will be about is these are things that I think, especially with the history of our denomination, should be sort of no-brainer, like, yeah, this is what we are about. This is our history. This is something we should all be on the same page about. But yet we're incredibly polarized on a myriad of issues at this present time. And compounding this issue, like you already brought up, is, I mean, we're also a congregation that is struggling with handing the baton to the next generation and continues to struggle with that. But then that issue of not being able to adapt and, you know, exegete our own cultures that we live in is what is ultimately the us shooting ourselves in the foot problem that could be potentially addressed if we thought a little bit differently about our approach to ministry, to pastoring, to any number of things. But from a production side of things, I've been sitting with you and talking with you and imagining how this plays out, about who is willing to share these stories. Because on one hand, you've told me you've reached out to a couple guests and there's potentially some apprehension to share these stories because of potentially the fallout, right? The politically charged, emotionally charged nature of these conversations revolving around race. You've told me that we're optimistic we'll get a couple stories shared by folks that are brave enough to share them. You've also told me that we could potentially expect to hear from the Black church, from African-American leaders within the church that'll give us a perspective on this issue or perspective on just being the church in a community that might help us better understand how we can move forward, especially in some of these neighborhoods you're talking about. But at the end of that, at the end of those lists of optimistic episodes, there's also a third option we're wrestling with of telling stories that folks are unwilling to share themselves because they have a genuine fear of losing their livelihood if they were honest about what they were going to tell story-wise, which is gut-wrenching and heartbreaking. But can you tell me a little bit more about the stakes for some of these folks about just even sharing a real life experience they had? Why this is such a almost, you know, at a boiling point conversation for some of these folks?
It's the saddest thing, to be honest, because it's like this is something that actually happened and it affected them in a very negative space. And so it's an important conversation to have. These people have faced trauma because they've been pastoring churches for years. These are the people they trusted. They've married some of these couples. They've, you know, been through them through heartaches and funerals. The list goes on to the trusted source that they should be to some of these congregants, and for them to turn their back on them in a lot of ways, and sometimes receptive. But for the most part, for what people are afraid of is that when they talk about it and the around people hear it, then they're going to be blacklisted from churches, or that they'll lose their ability to be voted back into their congregation. They'll lose the momentum that they have to sway the rest of the congregants. But as a denomination, these stories are important, and they're not talked about enough because people think that it's okay for them to stay where they are because the denomination is not moving towards this. But there is an undercurrent that's building momentum, and these stories could help motivate the congregation to see themselves and to see how they've affected their leaders and people that they trust are under shepherds. And I think that the fear aspect is showing how the tail wags the dog mm-hmm. in a lot of senses. The way that, you know, as pastors, you know, sometimes the if we're not careful, the mortgage outweighs the message. And so I want to say this for those of the people who I try to reach out to and do not want to speak to me. I have no ill will towards them at all.
Yeah.
Because I understand that they're in a no-win situation.
Yeah, the stakes are high.
Yeah, it's you think, you know, we're having some issues in other areas about being blacklisted and targeted and credentials taken. This is similar to that. I have seen people who have told me they're willing to have the conversation with me go back and talk to their district's leadership. And I'm not saying they didn't say DS specifically, but some leadership or trusted sources or mentors, and then call you back and say, I can't have that conversation. And it's like, but it happened to you.
This is a lived experience. You're not making something up.
Yeah, and this is not to trounce the congregation. It's not to be disrespectful or demeaning towards anybody. It's meant to be informative and healing because these people do not have an outlet, per se, to really discuss how they feel and to see how that honest moment transcends them and makes real change. And so, yeah, it's really heartbreaking. And even with the idea of me telling their story for them, it's like, change my name, change the church name.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? And it's sad because it's like, man, but if they knew it was you, it would mean a lot more.
It would. Well, I'm going to brag on you for a second and kind of hopefully articulate why we're not just trying to take pot shots at our own denomination or our own, you know, little circle of Christian pastors and lay people. I think it's fascinating. You have been on this journey. You had a book. You have been part of different movements. You've been invited to preach at different things. You're an evangelist. And from what you've told me, everywhere you've gone, these stories have kind of bubbled up to the surface, in part because you have, in many people's eyes, successfully created a much more diverse church at Bell Road. It didn't start out super diverse. I think you told me in the first interview we had, he's like, yeah, I don't know why all these white folks decided to call a black pastor, but here we are, right? Like that was the conversation I believe we had. And now I'm pretty sure you're not the only person of color at your church. And I think there's a much more diverse representation that is more reflective of the actual community that you live in. Please jump in if I'm getting something wrong, by the way. And so I've heard you share that you'll go around and you'll be talking at these different places, and some of it might be because, you know, people have noticed, oh, hey, something's going on at Bell Road. That's interesting. We should invite Jacoby. We should have him preach. He's a good preacher. We should have him share some stuff, interested in what's going on. And so as a result, you're traveling around the country, preaching, sharing, doing these things, and around the country, folks will pull you aside or they'll message you or they'll call you and say, hey, can I just tell you about what I'm dealing with? Can I share a little bit of my story with you?
Yeah.
And so it's not just this isolated thing. in the South, right? It's not just this thing in one state or two states. It's all over the country. And for so many interesting reasons, for so many different circumstances lining up, you have been this person that somehow is getting all these stories. You've almost got this huge, immense library of stories you could curate and share. But at this point, we're not sure how many of them we'll be able to actually share because of the stakes. And regardless, though, I think it's so important for us to have a moment, both as pastors, as individuals, but as a denomination, of self-reflection, of being willing to ask tough questions of ourselves, of being willing to, with grace, let stories be told without immediate retribution or, you know, immediate knee-jerk reactions to them, and just let them sit and consider why these stories took place and what they mean for us as the church, not just as Nazarenes, but as the church, as the bride of Christ. What could we do better? What could we have not done? What does it look like for us to make steps here and now to hopefully better celebrate the diversity of the kingdom and maybe embody that prayer Jesus taught us, especially the part that says on earth as it is in heaven. So wouldn't it be great?
It's this to me, you know, I find this series to kind of be, you know, as I really pray on a lot of things, you know, I'm always reminded of the story of poor old Barabbas. And because, you know, they're all like, be quiet, Barabbas. You know what I mean? But yet he had a need, and Jesus heard it. And despite everyone else being super loud and everyone else, you know, Jesus heard. And here's what I'm saying. These stories, to me, are screaming out in our denomination that they need to be heard, because if we can change anything about our denomination to help people to better understand that high noon on Sunday is not supposed to be the most segregated day, that the how much we've allowed culture to influence our faith, to even think that if a church, well, this is real words here, that a church wanted a Black pastor to be just an associate, not even the lead, just an associate pastor. And they called the pastor wokist, and he's just with the leftist movement. Now, they didn't even look at how qualified the leader was. Mm. They didn't look at, you know, how educated that leader was. They didn't look at the experience of that leader. All they did was see a picture. And this, I was in the room. And again, I'm not saying any, you know, I hope this person comes back and says it, but I'm in the room. They did not care. It was, no, we are not a part of this movement. This is wokeist. This is leftist. You're just trying to push the narrative of the liberal Nazarenes. And I remember that leader goes up there and says, you know what? It wasn't even my choice. And I'm looking at him going, yes, it was. This was your choice. You met with the person. You interviewed him. You loved their spirit. The teens, they loved this person's heart. And I saw that these young adults, all white, love this leader. And this leader making a hard choice to choose to say, if you call me, I will go. Already saying goodbye to family, already making the moves, emotionally left. And for that person to again get that, sorry, you know, we're not ready yet. And it's like, ready for what? That's the question that I really want to know. Ready for what? Ready for a pastor to be in your youth ministry? Because you've had the position for years. So what are you not ready for? Mm-hmm. You're not ready for what? This person's going to come in and make everything about race, which goes back to a lot of the conversation that's been had. It's, you know, if it's a Black person, it has to be about race. And that's not necessarily it. It's the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what we are tasked, convicted, and fully persuaded to do with our lives in ministry, is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And, you know, the thought process, I believe, in a lot of spaces is, if you bring someone in like this, they're going to make us feel bad about racism. And it's like,
we are. We should feel bad about racism with or without that person being brought on, right? I mean,
What? Me grabbing a microphone makes you think about racism. That's a you thing.
I mean, we should ask ourselves why. That's the, is he going to talk about racism? Like, should we maybe already have dealt with that? Because that's I was like, I'm sorry. I think that means we haven't. I think that means maybe we haven't actually fully dealt with that, and it's lingering. In closing, you shared something with me on a recent phone call about a response to you talking about Black History Month of February. And I mean, I was also going to say, hey, it's just going to be Black History Year, I guess, on the podcast, so we can just extend it from just February. But you told me something about, you know, what Black History Month means for the church, and I found it pretty profound. Do you remember that conversation? You remember what you're talking about? So can you just, in closing, can you share why Black History Month is important, and maybe it'll create a foundation for this podcast, for this season moving forward?
Yeah. Don't tune out, because it's important. This is not what you think this conversation is going to be.
Okay. Yeah, listen. Don't go away. Hold on.
Go away. Black history, to me, is church history. It is a movement done by the evangelical church. That's white. That's black. That's Hispanic. That's Asian. It is the church. And it's because the country was against the humanity of a whole group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the mass church was for the humanity of this group of people if they existed in other countries, mm-hmm. but not the ones that existed in this country. And there was nothing that the people, African Americans, could do about it without the church leaning in, having a reprocessing moment, and saying, this does not align with the gospel of Jesus Christ. This does not align. And so the church, coupled with Martin Luther King, the church coupled with Diane Nash and SNCC, it was the church that got together and said, we will help you. It was the church that helped out Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad. The church made Black history great. It was the church that coupled with the Black Union when they tried to protest. It was the church that helped out when you're talking about even the Alabama bus movement. It was churches, white, Black, and Hispanic churches, or churches in general, that was helping Martin Luther King and the Black people to help people on the bus. It was the church that joined in on the March on Washington. It's inescapable. And the mass media will try to target us, the Black History Movement, as if it is not. But listen, behind a lot of what happened in Black history, even the patents that Black people have, was fought for by Christian, white, and Black lawyers. Hear me when I say this. You cannot divide the church out of Black history. And for us to negate it as if it's a wokeist movement or the church doesn't need to do it, no, it's a powerful evangelical move of God, because we chose to go against the grain in order to do what is right in the eyes of our God. People lost families. People lost jobs. Sacrificed it all. You talk about picking up a cross. There was a lot of crosses being picked up in order for that to happen. Desegregation of schools. The church. Mm-hmm. The church was there. The interviews with Ruby Bridges, there's plenty of them where she mentioned church and Christians. White and Black, we have to come back to the understanding of the conviction and the call of God and what he called when he said to us that we're supposed to teach this message to all people. And if he's called us people in his own words, we took that seriously and gave everybody humanity. We just got to get back to that. Once we do, I promise you, this is a non-issue. This whole conversation is a non-issue, because you will see again in all that where your heritage lies. They want to say your heritage is in the South or the heritage is in this. Your Christian heritage, no matter what people tell you, is deeply rooted in the salvation of those oppressed by entities outside of the will of God. And that means that Black history, and we could all have a gasp of deep breath. Okay, we can lay down a lot of our own tensions, and we can lay down a lot of our tears and a lot of our uncomfortable with the conversation. Let's get back to who we were then, now. And you're talking about a revival.
Oof. But that's not what we mean when we mean revival, Jacoby. What are you talking about?
Right. We mean feel good messages.
Yeah, we want to be patted on the back doing God's with you. You're doing the things, right? We don't want to feel conviction that, oh no, maybe we should take a minute and consider where our heritage really is. I'm excited, Jacoby. I'm excited about what's to come. If there's any more to add, I'm going to just give our listeners a little bit of what to expect next. So any more we need to make sure and talk about before we wrap this up?
No, just keep an open ear, you know, to this. And when we really get to these conversations and I can finally get some people on to have let's commit to the journey and hear their conversation. Because these people who do come on, there's courage there.
Yeah, and we should honor that because it is a big sacrifice potentially to share these stories, right?
Yeah.
So to our listeners, we have hopes. I'm used to having a pretty tight schedule, but we're going to let go of that because I think this is just such an important topic. In this podcast, we like to make sure that the topic is worth sharing. And so this one is so worth sharing that we're going to take our time with it. So I'm going to say, optimistically, in a couple weeks, we'll have our first episode. And you can expect either hearing from an actual guest, hearing from a church leader, or eventually you may hear Jacoby and I talking about stories that were shared with Jacoby. And we're going to have a conversation about them because we think they're so important that even though the guest maybe doesn't feel safe in sharing them, we need to talk about what happened to some extent. So in the coming weeks, look forward to our first episode and we will get it to you as soon as we can. Be sure to be subscribed. You can check us out on social media, though I will confess I'm pretty terrible at social media anymore because social media is pretty terrible. So there's kind of a reason for that. But stay tuned, stay subscribed, and we will continue to try to release episodes on Wednesdays when we are ready and able to do so. Jacoby, I'm excited. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This has been the Millennial Pastor Podcast. Stay tuned.